So I have in my mind a rule of three, and if I go 3 days without training, I'm dying. My skill set is dying. My ability to be relevant in a violent confrontation is dying if I have a 3 day stretch where I don't train.
Welcome to a new episode of Fighter Mindset. Today, I'm joined by Mr. Chad Lyman. He is an amazing guy. He is an active police officer in Las Vegas, in the United States. He has combined his decades of operational law enforcement with his decades of mixed martial arts and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu training to become one of the most sought-after self-defense trainers in the country of the United States. He's a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. He's the director of combatives for Progressive Force Concepts team. He's lead instructor and primary curriculum developer for PFC's Code for Concepts courses. He's a field training officer with the Las Vegas Police Department. He's a SWAT operator. And basically, he's a badass. He's a cool guy, and I had the pleasure of talking with him and learning from him. So if you're in the law enforcement, wherever you are, write down the notes of the information that he's sharing. It's so valuable. And share it with all of your friends as well. Have a good Sunday. Take care of each other. Stay safe. Welcome, Mr. Chad Lyman, to Fighter Mindset Podcast.
Hey, thank you. I really appreciate the invite, the opportunity to talk to you guys today.
Appreciate it too. The reason I ask it, well, I've been paying some attention to the work you do when it comes to self-protection skills, and that you're using Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, you're using the concepts, principles, and then you're using it for when it comes to self-protection. And also watch a video where you're teaching stop using blocking. Mm-hmm. That was some old video, I think.
Yeah. So I don't come up with that. Well, if it's a video I do, I come up with the the name of it. Yeah. But if I don't do it, that particular video was made by Paulo Rubio, and Paulo is the founder of Funker Tactical, and then he's a partner in Aperture, which is a newer form and a newer channel. Paulo loves to create, loves to take a buzz line and try to get people to watch it.
Yeah.
While I wouldn't say blocking is totally useless, I would say that that particular video I did show what I think is a better option and what I think is a more consistent option. And so that is a good video. That got a lot of response.
Yeah, I don't like reading comments, but I could see some guys they were standing on the principle saying, well, it is blocking.
guys, you're exactly correct. Maybe they dig in their heels, or they want to relate it to something they're doing. And really, I'm kind of like you. I'll read the comments to try to interact with people.
Yeah.
If they want to, but if I find that the interaction's not productive, I don't worry about it. Like, if you're doing something else and you like doing that, then go ahead.
I
use is not based in theory. I've got hours and hours and hours of practical application with both myself, with guys that I've trained. I've literally been able to train hundreds of police officers, probably thousands. I've trained multiple fighters who have fought on the highest levels. And so, It's not a theory from the neighborhood dojo.
Or McDojo.
Yeah. I mean, we're not a bunch of fat guys in weird gear punching each other repeatedly on Thursday night. You know, it's guys going out in harm's way, either in a sporting context. But they're fighting for money. They're not fighting at some tournament they had to pay to register for. You know, they're professionals. Or it's professional law enforcement or military operators, and they're having real altercations as well. So I think I try to make a point, though, often when I teach, and this is as often as last night. I taught here in Vegas at one of the gyms that I instruct at, and I was telling the guys, I was showing them an aspect of a particular movement. And I said, listen, this is not the way, this is a way. Now, it's a good way. Yep. It's proven under pressure, and but it's not the only way. There's more than one way to do what I'm showing you. This is a way we'll do today because this is what I want to work on. And I think, you know, I'd pick this particular position and movement based on that team. I train a lot with them. And I had seen a hole, guys were getting stuck in a certain position. And I was showing them a way out of that position. But I make sure to emphasize, listen, I don't know everything. And shoot, even what I think I know, maybe I'll know something better in a year. And I'll adjust. You know, I'm always learning. Yeah. But I also show the things I show, are things in general. If you see me post something online, that is something that has worked either in hard training or actual fights or both. And so
yeah so like for you it is important to be humble. As you mentioned that you're being honest, saying, hey, this is a way instead of the way, because I guess a lot of instructors or systems, they're putting a lot of effort on saying this is the way, like this is the ultimate way. And I've met some instructors in the past saying, okay, if you don't train this system or just certain style, you might as well go and train kickboxing or yoga.
Yeah. That's always a red flag for me when I hear a guy say that I'm the only way or myself's the only stuff. Well, even if I felt that way, so let's make an imaginary, you know, I like to think critically about myself along with others. I include myself in the critical thinking. So let's say Chad Lyman's such a genius in some weird abstract idea, which I don't have, but let's say I did. Okay, I'm the best. I'm the only one who has any real truth. My stuff really works. No one else's works. If that were true, what did guys do before I came along? How did they possibly defend themselves? I mean, everyone was defenseless before Chad Lyman came of a certain age and came over a certain experience level. No one else could fight. Who did I learn from? Did I just make it up? Did it just evolve out of my own head? No, I learned from other people who are fully competent. They're fully capable. And then I take what I learned and I try to apply it. And maybe I find an offshoot or a different way to do something that someone showed me, or maybe I improve on the thing that we're doing, or maybe they improve on it. And then I learn from them again. I find it very, like, even if that statement were to be true, you have such limited reach. I'm so grateful for the opportunities I have. Like I'm talking to you in Norway right now about these topics. And that's such a blessing for me. But that's really what it is. It's a blessing. It's not like the country of Norway has never had good training or talked about these things. It's not like you haven't found other people where you find truth from them and good things to train.
Mm-hmm.
For an instructor to think, and like you, I've seen these guys to say, oh, this is the system, oh, this system, that system. It's always a red flag because you believe your own hype too much. You know, it's dangerous. Yeah. That's when you become, you stop thinking critically. You think you found the answer. You know?
Yeah.
I know I've been exposed to some true things. I know I've discovered some truth, but I know that the truth I know will evolve over time. Just like when you're 14 or 15 and you think you're in love with someone, and then that matures over time and you actually have relationships, and you actually have relationships that go well, and then maybe ones that don't, and you learn from them. And then hopefully you're maturing and you're getting better, and you realize that what you thought was love at 14 or 15 was not love. You know, now maybe you have children with someone. In my case, this is exactly what happened. I married someone. I thought I was in love with her when I married her. And then over the years, the appreciation that I've gained for her in watching us struggle together, watching us have children and raise them together, watching us go from struggling to pay our bills to being blessed and being comfortable. We're not rich, but we're good. Using good principles of money management. All those things have happened where I look back on when I was a teenager and that person didn't understand love at all. He had a silly notion of love. Mm-hmm. Well, everything is the same. Like for you to think that I'm the only answer to combatives or fighting would be like me to say, well, I'm the only answer for love, or I'm the only answer for faith, or I'm the only answer for fill in the blank. It's a silly notion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. Not one that I've subscribed to.
Yeah. I agree. Same with me. Like I've started being critical about the different voices that's out there, because there's so many, and I've been blessed to talk with a lot of great guys and girls, like in my podcast, and I regularly talk with one of my good friends. We say, like, we both agree on there's so much information out there and where to go and which source is there out there. There's so many. And well, I'm using the principle of Bruce Lee, where he says, just take what you can use of, like, yeah, yep. and discard the rest.
I think that's so, I have the same thing because I'm still a student, right? I teach predominantly. I teach from 2006 to now. I've been instructing, and I've been instructing on a professional level where I actually earn an income from instructing. I started training in the late 90s, really, really hard, like regularly. And then I was also having applications at work because I was already a police officer when I started training. And so I've been training and utilizing what I've been training for over 20 years. And then also in a competition format, I've done some of the competitive stuff as well. And then coaching both competitive athletes and then hobbyists, everyday people who just want to be safer, like a self-defense aspect, and then law enforcement. But I'm still a student. Like, I'm still enjoying learning. So like you, I have to have a general filter. If there's so much stuff, I can get bogged down.
Yeah.
And I could waste 5 hours looking at stuff online. And so I looked for two things. You mentioned earlier, humility. I want to find someone who is humble, and that doesn't mean not confident. Humility doesn't mean that I'm not a confident person or that I don't believe that I'm capable. But I heard a good definition of humility, and I use it with my athletes or with my police officers when I teach in a team setting. And I say, humility doesn't mean you think less of your humility doesn't think mean you think you are less than someone else. It means you think of yourself less. You think of other people more.
Mm.
So if I'm a humble person, it doesn't mean I think that I'm less than or that I don't have any confidence. It doesn't mean that I don't think I'm capable, but it means I think of the other people more. And that's who I think of. I look for that in people because I know that a humble person is going to try to teach truth and not hold back and not try to be, okay, well, I'll show a little bit, but I don't want to show too much because maybe I'll lose if I show too much. Maybe this guy will pass me. Well, I don't want to learn from that guy. I want to learn from someone who will try to make me as productive and as good and as safe as I could be. So humility is one thing I look for. And that goes to our earlier statements of, it's an automatic red flag for me when a guy says, well, I'm the only way. Okay, well, I could still learn from him, but it off puts me so much and there's so much good stuff available that I'm skeptical of that kind of a source of information. And then the second thing I look for is the person based in fundamentals and principles and not based in trying to get you to pair up moves or trying to get you to acquire moves. So are they fundamental and principle based? Are they position based? Are they, those are things I look for, those two things. A humble teaching style and then a fundamental principle based approach, a problem solving approach.
Mm, yeah.
Those two things give me the most bang for my time and for my buck.
Mm.
And so those are two things I actually use to analyze, is this a source that I want to continue to pursue? I find that those two things bring the most to the table for me. And then I can share more with other people. So.
Mm, yeah. Well, I really love what you're saying about that it has to be fundamentally based and principle based. And that's something that I've found in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Well, at least this, how to say it, like the organization or just because there's so many organizations, but the place I found to train, my teacher, he was teaching moves based on principles, and he didn't say, okay, this is how you you should do it, but this is how you can do it. Like, he showed our way instead of the way, and I had to find my own ways of doing those. But still, we got the principles, so that's something I'm working on, like what I'm gonna teach as I'm working on developing a anti-bullying program. I want it to be a concept-based program, not something say, hey, this is, if I'm teaching kids, telling them, okay, this is the only way, and they get beat up even more, then I can just stop teaching.
Yeah, and that's a really valuable approach because teaching in that manner gives people knowledge that they can retain or remember. And when we teach them in a knowledge-based manner, a principle-based manner, fundamental-based manner, those are things that can be retained under pressure and stress, in my experience, better than a step-by-step, step one, step two, step three, step four. Now, having said that, and here's the other thing that you're learning this way and then you're teaching this way will affect people's mindset. And that's kind of what, you know, your podcast is all about mindset. How do I have the proper mindset where I can learn and then apply and perform ultimately if needed, right?
Yeah.
Well, this learning style, I believe what you're doing, for one, it's shown by people who study learning, that learning in a principle or concept-based manner offers retention. And that is not specific to the topic of self-defense or Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu or even MMA, whatever. that's just learning in general. So that approach is sound. It's been shown to be sound by those who study transfer of information from one person to another, teacher to student. Where does learning take place? So this is a very sound approach that you have adopted. The other thing that will make it, oftentimes in jiu-jitsu, one of the sayings is that a black belt is five steps ahead or five moves ahead. And I have changed that over the years. I'm a Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt. I have my second degree, which means I've been a black belt. I've been a black belt since 2012. Every 3 years as an active black belt, you get a stripe on your belt. I'll get another stripe this year. This will be my ninth year as a Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt. So I've now been a black belt. Well, not yet, but eventually I'll be a black belt longer than I've been training. So that's coming because I just continue to train.
Yeah.
However, having said that, they say a black belt is five steps ahead. And I disagree. What I think is a black belt is in a position where he can do three, four different things. Black belts are not five moves ahead, or I would just do the first move and the fight would be over. Instead, I'm fundamental and principle based. So I'm not trying to do a move. I'm trying to achieve a dominant position in which I can do multiple moves. As I achieve that position, I might try move one. You may counter move one, but I've achieved a spot that fundamentally, and using principles, I can flow right into the next, into the next, into the next. And eventually I catch my opponent. Now, if my opponent has no idea what I'm doing, maybe I catch them with the first thing. But even my really experienced blue belt, I'm 53 years old. My blue belt may be quite a bit younger than me, a very good athlete, very good shape. He's still going to be hard to submit. If I just throw an arm bar at him, he may begin to defend it intelligently, and I may have to switch to a choke, ultimately to maybe a sweep and then an arm bar again. Well, I'm going to achieve those adjustments and those transitions because I've learned in a fundamental and principle-based manner that connects things. Not a move one, two, three, four, five. Everything is interconnected when you learn and teach in the manner of which you are pursuing. So I think you're on the right road. I think it's valuable.
Appreciate it. Yeah. For me, like learning about principles, like that's what I learned from. And once I start to learn about that it's all based, well, principles and concepts, everything makes more sense. I had the pleasure to train with, he's a Dr. P. He has a PhD in criminal psychology, and he does this like fight science TV on YouTube. Mark Phillips from London. He's been training Wing Chun for years, I guess 30 years plus, but he's whatever he's teaching now, like it's all based on principles and concepts. And he also, when I spoke with him last year, I had an interview with him. He said like he's also, I think he's in his 50s, and when he's rolling sparring with, he's a Brazilian black belt, third degree, I think, but he said that he has to like think differently because he can't compare with the other guys. Like some of them are younger, they are, as you said, hard to submit. Then he will have to think differently. And like, so that's, and for me, learning about, concepts and principles, it's a game changer for me, at least.
One of the things that may help as you pursue this, and one of the things I've done over the years, is I take each position and I talk in my mind and I make the principles of that position. And I'll give you an example. If I were to be in bottom, either half guard, closed guard, open guard, butterfly, any guard, Does not matter, but I'm in bottom position. And in my mind, I desired to create a sweep where I would come to top position. A sweep has certain principles or components that that every sweep has. Every technique has these principles or fundamentals. And these, the principles of a sweep are, try to create a situation where I take away any post or base to one side or the other. That is a component of a sweep, right? My other four, so that's a fundamental. I'm going to have to do that at some point in this sweep. Tie up an arm, get my leg outside their legs, get their arm across their body, get an underhook, get an overhook, whatever. Another component of a sweep is I need to establish inside position with my head or with my arms, or by pinning their wrist to them, for example. I need to dominate inside position so that I can create leverage, because oftentimes they're bigger or younger or stronger than me, because I am an older guy and I'm not naturally big. I'm about 5'9", 186 pounds or so, 185 pounds. I work out a lot, so I'm strong for my age and my size, but I'm not big. So I need to create an opportunity for me to create leverage, and that's going to come from winning inside position and controlling distance. If I want to escape, I create distance conceptually, fundamentally. If I want to control, I take away distance fundamentally. So these fundamentals are in my head before I do the sweep, before I do the move. The move comes second to, am I controlling a post? Do I have inside position? And have I taken away space, or am I controlling distance? Once those fundamentals are in place, now I can look for the move. But the move is not first. The fundamentals are first. Now, in addition to those fundamentals, some general fundamentals from bottom are, I always look to attack posture on my opponent, to break their posture, to break their structure. Structure and posture are closely related. Can I get their head out in front of their hips? Can I get their head behind their hips? Can I control an arm with an underhook? That's a structure break. I'm in controlling inside position. So I'm always looking to break posture, to break structure, to attack their base, and to create angles. So those four fundamentals, I use those for takedowns from my feet. I also use those for sweeps from a bottom position. So pretty soon in my mind, swirling around in the middle of the chaos of the fight is not like scissor sweep. That's not in my mind. In my mind is break his posture, control the inside position, take away space. Okay, now here comes the scissor sweep. I've got a post controlled. Oh, he gets his post to the ground. Now I switch and I go the other way to a back take. You know, those are the things that are playing in my mind. But the fundamentals and the position is playing first, even from a non-dominant position like bottom. When I want to escape mount, the fundamentals of escaping the mount are get on a hip, frame his hips off so he can't climb up high under my armpits. Don't extend your arms. Make your arms frames. And try to widen his base by getting an elbow inside a knee and hip escaping laterally to make his base wide. So now I have a hole to pull my legs through to escape the mount and get to like half guard, for example. So every position, if you and I trained together for a day and you said, coach, I want to learn this position, this position, this position, I would not teach you five moves from each position. I might eventually, but what I would teach you first is the fundamentals of that position, either escaping it or holding it. Once we knew the fundamentals, Well, then I will show you two or three moves from each spot, but the moves are interchangeable. So that's a way I've approached both learning and then teaching, because you mentioned you're going to one day teach jiu-jitsu, and just by talking to you, I can tell you will. But that's a system that you could use to create opportunities for your students to learn.
Great. So like when it comes to like transitioning this onto self-protection skills,
yes,
which you've been doing for, one of the topics I wanted to talk with you about. And so like your approach, yeah, you mentioned this, like you're teaching based on fundamentals, principles, concepts. Mm-hmm. So because like as we said, like, and I said that there's so many red flags out there, and even I have some good friends who are law enforcement officers. I was training with one of my friends. He was training jiu-jitsu with me, like we're in the same club. So he has been using concepts in his duty. Like when it comes to self-protection, and there's so many, what would you say, like we talked about the red flags, but when it comes to the skills, the difference you got the hard soft skills, you got the hard skills, and then you there's so much, and you got mindset. I guess we could talk on hours for that, but like if we're gonna put it, like how to say it, bring it to the paper.
Yes. So if I understand correctly, one of the things that might be valuable for us to talk about is with the importance of getting self-defense right? It's kind of a life and death game. And then there's even legal aspects that you have to consider depending on where you live. There's the fight itself is only the violent event is only one aspect of self-defense. The physical toll that a violent event could take on you could be substantial and could be lifelong. It could end your life. The mental or emotional disturbance of having been in a violent confrontation and maybe doing things to someone else you didn't want to have to do. There can be some mental some challenges there. And then the aftermath, which could be being cleared criminally, and then if there's any civil liability, those are all very challenging aspects of self-defense type scenario. And so I have to prepare for those. So people will ask me, hey, Chad, how do I get ready for these real events? Because I don't want, I don't want any sport influence, because I want to know the real stuff's going to help me in a street altercation or a self-defense altercation, for example. And what I tell them is I say, be cautious of searching for this holy grail system that somehow only exists for the street. Like instead, what I actually encourage people to do is train the sport, but not the sport like not jiu-jitsu sport fighting. Like, this is how I score points. This is how I stall in a match. This is how I get an advantage, so I win the match. This is a submission. Not sport in that mindset. But when I tell people to train sport, what I mean is train in a sporting environment where you can train safely, you can improve conditioning, you can improve mental toughness, because many times you want to quit. The round is going on. You feel defeated. You feel tired. You don't want to go train, but you go train anyway. But you train, it gets you in better shape. It can make you mentally tougher if you'll let it. And then you can begin to acquire skill sets that then can be applied in a self-defense scenario for real, in like a street altercation where you're defending yourself or your family. So I tell guys, the first thing you need to do is find a sport type gym environment where they actually fight each other. And that would be jiu-jitsu, that would be MMA, that would be boxing, that would be Muay Thai. Mm. I prefer an MMA with a gi jiu-jitsu setting, okay, along with no gi, because you can really cover everything that might happen in a fight, minus weapons, okay? Yeah. So, yeah. But I tell people, start with the empty hand sport aspect first, meaning find a good MMA and jiu-jitsu gym to train at, and then train 2 to 4 times a week, every week. It's a part of your life. It's scheduled. If you have, like before I found mixed martial arts and Brazilian jiu-jitsu, I would work out regularly. I would lift weights and I would run. And I thought that was getting me ready for physical confrontation as a police officer. But really all that is physical conditioning, which is important. But what I do now is I take those hours I would have put into lifting weights and I put them into combatives with other human beings. And my body becomes strong. My body becomes used to the output that it needs when it wrestles or it's boxing or MMA or jiu-jitsu, which will happen in a fight. I don't need to know how to bench press 32 times because the guy who wants my car is not going to say, hey, I'm going to take your car. But before I do, I've got this nice bench press here. I'm going to go first and then you get to go and whoever does more reps wins.
Yeah.
And I'll either take your car or I won't, depending on how many times you can bench press this weight. Well, obviously that's silly. That's not going to happen.
No, not at
What's
all.
Really going to happen is he's going to try to take your car from you. And in that instance, I might just give him the car because the car is not worth it. But let's say he physically attacks me because he believes that's what he needs to do, or he doesn't want a witness, let's say. So he's going to attack me anyway. I'm going to give him the car. And he's like, well, that's not good enough. I'm going to physically attack you. The best preparation I could have for that would be to have gone and been physically attacked repeatedly in an environment where I'm physically safe. And I begin to build these skill sets.
Mm. Yeah.
So I always encourage my police officers to go train in a sport type gym and then add in training knives or add in a training gun or add in getting to handcuffing, and that will give you a well-rounded skill set to help you deal with those situations.
Mm. Yeah, like that fits well. What you're saying now fits well with
Are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me? Yeah. Can you hear me? Can you hear me? Hello?
Stop.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, my AirPods stopped
okay.
working.
Okay. That's okay. Well, that fits. Well, ask one of my best buddies, who's we're trained together. Well, we have been training too much now, distance, COVID, and so on. But we're training. We've been doing this working on concepts, and I have a bit more solid background when it comes to dealing on working on the ground. So we did not me and him, but at a training, was it last year, in jiu-jitsu club I'm training at, we did this knife fighting. But it's difficult to train on disarming a knife. It's difficult, but when it comes to I got a question from him, and he's like, when it comes to time limits, you're working out at your job, and you don't have the time for training in your spare time. Well, this is for police officers. What should be prioritized, and are there some simple principles that you are like emphasizing on?
Yes. So such a great question. So I prioritize the majority of my training towards what I, the time I have, right? So that could vary from person to person. So however much time I have to look at what do I normally use. And so in law enforcement, you'll find, especially in America, you'll find guys who are gun guys or tactical guys. Mm. And they say, oh, I'm a weapons-based guy. I'm a gun guy. I'm a baton guy. I like to use a baton, whatever, or I like to train. But the reality is they're not actually hitting people with their baton very often. They're certainly not shooting people very often. It's extremely rare for a police officer, even in the U.S. where we have more shootings, for you to have a police officer who's been in more than one shooting and been a trigger puller is super rare. That just doesn't happen very often. So
interesting.
But it would also be pretty much impossible for a police officer who works in a big city like Las Vegas or LA to say that they haven't grabbed someone several times that week, had to put their hands on somebody. So I'm not shooting anyone, but I'm grabbing people every day. That should dictate, okay, well, I need to develop my communication skills, number one, and my thinking skills, because could I de-escalate this or could I gain cooperation through communication of body language or verbal communication? This is extremely important. And this is first, can I get cooperation? Absent getting cooperation, and now we're moving into physical force. Most physical force, even in the US, is going to happen at an empty hand realm. Most of it.
Okay.
So that's, you know, I must focus there, because that is going to be what I'm going to experience. So how do I make up the other? What I've done is I have purchased my own training weapons, training handguns that are inanimate objects. They don't fire rounds, and training knives. And I will get reps. I will take 20 minutes at my house and get reps with my son with those weapon systems. I will work those into jujitsu. Like you said, you work knives into jujitsu.
Yeah,
we'll do that. Briefly. We'll do that 4 times a year, but we do jujitsu every week. Why? Because the knives just aren't that common. It's just not going to happen. But should we still have some exposure to it? Yes. And once I'm exposed to the knife in occasionally, I can still remember that and think about that when I'm doing my regular jujitsu. And I can still say, hey, when we trained with the knife the other day, this is a position I would not want to be in. I would have to get out of this position right away. Or I can say, hey, I remember when we trained with the knife, this is a position that would be good. I could have done all the good things against the knife from here. So just by having exposure to the extreme situation, I can weave that into my mundane or everyday training and still have my everyday training reinforce what I might need to do in an extreme situation. But I don't have to have every moment of training extreme craziness. And in fact, that's probably not productive to do that.
Great answer. Yeah.
The other thing I do because of lack of time is I have a thing, and you can share this with your law enforcement friends. I try to draw fun principles, even with how often should I train and how much. Is there a principle that covers that? I believe there is. So one of the ways I address that is I call it the rule of three. And it's not really a rule, the number three, but it's a general concept. And that concept is, in nature, if you think of threes in nature, it can mean life and death. And this is general, there's not a true law. But think, if my air got cut off for 3 minutes or longer and I couldn't breathe, through a strangulation or through some kind of, I'm being crushed or something, and I can't get another air in. And I go more than 3 minutes, I'm going to pass out. If I can't get more air, I'm going to die. If I lose more than 3 pints of blood, I'm at risk of dying. If I'm in Norway and I get stranded with no cover or concealment or shelter in the winter, outside for 3 days, I'm going to die. It, same thing for me in the desert here in Vegas. If I get trapped in the desert and I don't have shelter and I don't have water, I'm probably going to start dying within 3 hours, let alone 3 days. So this rule of three, I looked at it and it seems like it exists, right? So I have in my mind a rule of three. And if I go 3 days without training, I'm dying. My skill set is dying. My ability to be relevant in a violent confrontation is dying. If I have a 3 day stretch where I don't train, and training could consist of reviewing relevant video online, it could consist of solo drills, it could consist of training with a friend, it could consist of going to class at an actual academy or school and training with teammates. It could consist of practicing drawing with a blue gun at my house. It could consist of physical conditioning. I don't have a 3 day period of my life that I'm not training. It doesn't exist. So every single time I trained last night. At the end of the training session, in my mind and in my principles, a 3 day clock has begun. I don't know if I'll train today. I might be able to train this afternoon. If I don't train today, I'll go into tomorrow. Now I'm on day two of not training. Now I know tomorrow night I'm going to train, absent being sick or having a work conflict. I'm going to jiu-jitsu tomorrow night. So that will start my clock again. But my clock always runs. I don't have an off season. There's no downtime. A vacation, I will find 20 minutes in the hotel room to do drills. If I'm a week long, my wife and I are going to go on a cruise. We're going to go on a 5 day cruise. She knows at some point I'm going to take 20 minutes a couple times probably on the cruise and shadow box, do drills, think about combatives, review some lesson plans. She knows I'm going to train on that trip, but I'm also not going to, that's not the purpose of the trip. So I'm not going to train every day and I'm not going to go to class. I'm not going to train for 2 hours. I'm not going to find a group of people and train. I'm going to have to modify my training. But I don't have a 3 day period I don't train ever. So for my law enforcement friends, annual training is not sufficient. The training your agency gives you might be once a year. It might be, hey, go to this class randomly. That's not training. Your training must be on a schedule. And it must be, now it can be short. I can only afford 20 minutes, but I got it in. Now I could do an hour, I'll do an hour. Now I could go to class and train, I'll go do that. But there is no not training. So that is a way I approach that, to make time. You have to make time. And I make time, I don't have a 3 day period. Since I made that rule several years ago, I've never had a 3 day period that I haven't trained.
Yeah, that was enlightening for me as well. And I guess, and I hope for the rest of the listeners, that it's more than just a necessity for, it's, well, if we're going to put it into something important, it's crucial, or it can be like the matter of, well, if we're going to put it to the extremes, matter of life or death in whatever that, like, in situations that might occur, or yeah.
I have one other formula that helps me mindset wise in this topic.
Yeah, and please, that is the please formula, share.
Yeah, that is a formula, C over T. So think of the letter C and then a line and then the letter T equals R. And C stands for consistency, T stands for time, and the R stands for results. So consistency over time gives you a result. Now here's, this formula is either incredible and helps you grow, or it's damning. It like dams up your progression. Mm. It like actually makes it worse for you. Yeah, but the formula is truth. It does not matter. The formula does not care how Dag or how Chad applies the formula. The formula is, it just is, it's truth. So consistency over time equals a result. What that means, if I extrapolate it to me as a person, is that consistently over time, if I do not train, what's happening is I'm consistently over time. The result is I'm even worse because I'm getting older. I'm getting maybe fatter. I'm not more capable as I age physically. I'm not reinforcing a strong mindset. So my mindset is becoming weaker. There's no stay the same. I'm only becoming better or I'm getting worse. And that goes back and forth throughout my lifetime. I'm never always just getting better. But as long as I'm striving consistently over time, the result is I will improve for me, not for anyone else. I can't compare myself to another person's gifts, what they have, what I have, what I, you know, they're taller, they're stronger, they're younger, they're more athletic, they train more years, whatever. I have to worry about Chad. But the only thing I can control is my own formula, my own truth, which is consistently over time, what you do gives you a result. As a police officer, if you go to an academy and you get a bunch of training, and then as the years go on, now I'm 9 years into my career and I consistently over time have not trained every 3 days. I haven't lived by the 3 day rule. I have 9 month gaps between my training, 6 month gaps between my training, a year. Consistently over time, the result I'm getting worse. I actually suck more than when I started. I'm extrapolating my suckiness and making it grow. Conversely, and I can start where I'm at right now today, because the formula does not care how bad you are or how good you are. The formula only cares how you apply it. So I can change the formula today in my own life and say from this day forward, consistently over time, I'm going to train. And the result's going to be I'm going to improve for me over time. The end result is I'll be better than I was if I didn't do it. No matter if I'm better than the guy next to me or not, does not matter. It only matters with me. And consistently over time, I just need to train a little, a lot, not a lot, a little, not a seminar, not a certification course. Those are okay, but I need to train a little, a lot. So I use those three methodologies, train a little, a lot. Consistency over time gives you results, and train every 3 days. I don't have a 3 day period where I'm not addressing that formula. I don't have a 3 day period where I put that formula on the shelf and pretend like I'm not getting a result. You always get a result. That's in your personal life with your relationship with your significant other, whether that be straight or gay or whatever, I don't care. Your relationship with kids, if you have them, your relationship with your coworkers, your relationship with your employer. What you do consistently over time affects that. You're getting results, your health. You know?
Yeah, that's so,
So that's a mindset piece that's real strong for me.
I love it. That's something I've started to be like very conscious about. I have a daughter, she's turning four. So I decided to move closer to her instead of having 3 hours to drive. I got 10 minutes now. But the most important thing that I'm doing is I'm consistently training and getting better shape. I went out running this morning I have to be conscious about what I eat and what I fill my mind with, because it will all affect her, like, and even the way I'm treating people. And I had this eye opener when it was snowing a lot here, and well, a lot it always snows in Norway. But I was, my car was, well, the driveway to my car, it was snowed in. So, and I shared the parking lot with my neighbors, and I rarely talk with them. But then I had this like eye opener. I was thinking, okay, what would my daughter say to me if she saw me that I'm removing the snow from where my car stands, and I don't care about my neighbors. So what I did, I took the whole thing, and my neighbor, he was like, suddenly he joined in because he said like, oh, yeah, I shouldn't do it by yourself. But I was like, hey, if my daughter saw me, like, what would she say? So that was crucial, a crucial moment. Well, yeah, it was important for me to do that. So like,
yeah. Yeah. And what a great thing is you've taken this aspect of your life with your daughter, and it adds a new perspective, and it's an accountability, right?
Yeah.
So it's interesting you bring that up. What spurred me mindset wise to train was my family. And before training, I was not afraid to go in harm's way. I was not afraid to go put my hands on someone if I needed to as a law enforcement officer. But I knew I owed it to my wife and to my kids. The reality in the US is police officers do get killed on the job. We get killed more than some other countries, and some other countries more than us. I believe Norway officers, I believe, have a lower instance of being murdered than officers here in the US.
Yeah. Yeah.
However, having said that, it still could happen there.
Yeah, of course.
It can happen anywhere.
Yeah,
and so the motivation for me to actually prepare and train a lot was actually my wife and my kids, because no matter how much I train, I could still lose. I mean, we have Navy SEALs, Delta guys who go overseas and get killed by guys who learned how to fire their AK in a mountain while herding goats. They didn't go to some special forces school. And on that particular fight, they ended up killing our guy. So it's not like my training makes me impervious or makes me indestructible or a superhuman or anything. But what I am doing is I'm being honest with myself and with my family and with my own mindset that for me, I don't ever want to lose. My mindset is that I will not lose and that I will win. But I know, because I've prepared hard, that it's just my day. If it happens, it happens. I prepared, I got ready, I did my part. If it goes wrong and I lose, then that's what it is. I personally have faith in a God, and I think, oh, it's my day. Whether or not someone does or not does not matter to me. But for me, I do have those thoughts and those feelings, and I feel as though I have prepared for that the best that I can, so that I've prepared to do my job professionally to try to protect other people. And I showed up prepared to do that task. And then mindset wise, I've gone through extremely hard training. And so it's unlikely that my mind will quit in the middle of the fight. However, if I can't control it, if it does, it hasn't yet, but I don't know, I know I'm not a super.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah.
But, I'm doing the best I can. And up to this point, it's responded very, very, very well. Like, I've been in very threatening, very realistically life-threatening scenarios through my job. And thus far, I've been able to perform very, very well in those circumstances. And I performed well in violent situations that weren't life-threatening, and controlled them so that they didn't become life-threatening for me or for the suspect. It's a weird dynamic. It's a weird synergy that actually the safer I am, the safer my adversary is.
That I understand. I've been going through security, what's it called, tactical analysis behavior training program. it's good. And same like when I've been working with troubled kids and being able, if it had been for my Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu training, I owe it to that, like being able to stay calm, relax, and like have a neutral body language. Well, the situation weren't life-threatening, but you feel like, okay, I could read the signs that saying, okay, there will be some altercation, there will be some fighting, but it all went good. And because I had to be aware of the kid as well, and to, what's it called, spare him, but I don't remember the word, but like, yeah, make sure that he didn't get hurt as well. I think, yeah, that's
yeah,
word.
Yeah. Well, and not, well, not hurt unreasonably, right? He,
spare. On, I think that's the word.
Yeah, depending on how violent he is and what he's doing at the time. I mean, he might actually get hurt, but he should not get hurt because of my choice or what I do. It should be his choice,
yeah.
And he is forcing this altercation. You know, from a law enforcement perspective, this is very, very important. And what training does and what you just articulated or talked about that I think is very, very important that's worthwhile on a podcast like this where we talk about mindset. Training allows me to have a knowledge-based fear and not an emotion-based fear. What I mean by that is this. When you train consistently and regularly over time, and then you start to gain competence and you start to become confident and good at the skill sets you're developing, what that allows you to do is, if someone wants to attack me, I'm not arrogant. I don't have a lack of fear or concern for the fact that they might hurt me. I don't think, oh, no one can hurt me. I still have a fear of the consequences of me not responding if they attack me, right? Which could be, maybe they knock me unconscious, maybe they choke me to death, maybe they take, in my case, maybe they take my weapon systems and use them on me or another person.
Yeah.
So I have a fear that I need to win this physical altercation, but it's not based on the emotion of fear, which can lead, the emotion fear can lead me to do too much force. Or inappropriate force at the wrong time, or even gain control of my suspect and handcuff them. But because I'm emotionally invested now and I'm angry or scared or both, now I lash out at this person who's been restrained and I continue to use force beyond what was necessary. Those things all happen, in my opinion, unless you're a bad human being and you're just a bad person. Those things happen based on an emotional response because you have not trained appropriately and put yourself into forced situations, which jiu-jitsu does every day. Every day we're trying to mimic injury to one another, mimic potential murder of choking or breaking each other. And we're mimicking that without emotion, other than some intensity in our energy. So you and I drill at one intensity, we learn at one intensity, and then there might come time in a class where we shake hands and we're actually trying to finish each other. But the energy we're using is not finish each other like, hey, I hate you, I want to try to kill you or whatever. The energy we're using is trying to technically defeat our opponent through fundamentals and principles. Well, now I can take that same energy and use it in an altercation in a street setting because I've learned to harness it. And so that mindset comes out. And now the synergy that exists is I'm actually safer. I still have fear of what could happen to me physically, but the fear is no longer emotion. The fear is knowledge. Another way to put this is if you put me into a rear naked choke and you began to apply it. I've been choked unconscious. I'm not afraid of what that will feel like. It doesn't feel like anything. I just go to sleep. I do have a fear or a respect of that happening in a non-consensual environment because maybe you never let it go and I die, right?
Mm, yeah, yeah.
But even as I defend the choke, let's say we didn't know each other and you were an assassin and you were doing a rear naked choke on me and I was defending that. My defense still comes from a standpoint of knowledge, not emotion. So I'm going to use a knowledge gained to defend the choke. Now, if you're really trying to kill me, I may have to respond with extreme violence back at some point, especially if you're skilled and you're trying to kill me.
Mm-hmm.
I may have to respond with extreme violence. But even then, it wouldn't be an emotional response. It would be me evaluating how successful your attack was. Mm-hmm. So your attack indicated training and you didn't quit. So you had intent. So now I must respond with training and intent back and maybe extreme intent because I'm defending, but I'm not doing that because I am scared of you or I'm mad at you. I'm doing that because I respect your ability to do it to me and I know I must respond.
Mm.
So that kind of response is a much more pure response than an emotion, which overtakes us, right?
Yeah. So this is how regular sport
training can give you mindset for battle.
Regular
sport training can give you mindset for battle.
Mm.
As long as you allow it to and you understand.
Mm. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. So I know. So all in all, it all goes back to training and your methodology, as you mentioned, your methodology, don't let it like 3 days.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I take Sundays off to be with my family and I like to go to church and I choose to do that.
Mm.
I use Sunday to do some personal worship things that I enjoy. So I take Sunday off. There are times I have to work on Sunday and I will if I need to, but in general, Sunday is kind of a reset day. So every Sunday, my clock for sure goes to day one at least. But I normally train Saturday because I know I'm going to take Sunday off.
But
I don't miss Saturdays very often.
I appreciate you, Chad, giving you some valuable lessons. C over G equals R.
Yep.
And day of trees. And it was all new information for me as well. But it's so important.
Yeah. So I have written those things down and I encourage you to do that and feel free to share these thoughts with anyone. I don't try to own them or charge a royalty or I share them openly, hoping that my brothers who are like-minded will use them to improve. So C over T equals R, consistency over time equals results.
Mm.
Train a little, a lot.
Yeah, a little, a lot.
Yeah. And train every 3 days or you're dying. Don't have a 3-day break in your training.
Mm.
Please share that with your friends.
Yeah, I will. Most certain.
And we can have some C over T equals R in Norway.
Yeah, yeah. Because like when you mentioned that, I was like, C could be consistency. I have another good friend. He's like, we've been doing some training, 6 a.m. So I did it constantly, consistently 3 days a week, but then I started to fade away, like slip, and then suddenly I'm back at one. But the only person who I'm accountable for is myself and my daughter. That's
it.
Yeah.
That's it.
So it was important reminder. So I really thank you so much for that and sharing your richly knowledge. So I really appreciate.
Well, thank you. And I appreciate the opportunity to share. These things have been shared with me in different ways, either through physical lessons or actual coaching. And it's an honor for me to be able to share with others. And thank you for the opportunity, truly. I hope you're safe, and I hope you are able to train. And, you know, you're on your own journey, and I hope that it's a blessed one. And these things can help us in so many aspects of our life. So keep on the path. How do I pronounce your full name? It's Dag Tarjei.
Yeah, it's Taria.
Taria. And then what's the last name?
Hella.
Yeah. Are you a Viking?
Well, try to be.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. I have a lot of respect for the culture. And I believe the mindset is good. I believe the modern Viking, though, could combine the berserker, no retreat, no die mentality, with a very focused, formulated calm based on knowledge. And I think the modern Viking could become an unbeatable adversary.
Actually funny, like you mentioned berserker, because that is the name of the the guys I'm training with. One of my good friends, he calls his, well, it's not a club, but it's more like, what do you call it? I don't know, brotherhood. He calls it berserker combatives.
Good. It's part of your culture. There's nothing wrong with that.
No,
the strong parts of our culture we embrace, but then we try to find ways to make them stronger. Yeah.
So like one of my tattoos is the Viking or Celtic cross, but you have all this, like, what do you call it? Like, knots and
Yeah. Well, I have a lot of respect for your ancestors and what hardy men they were, true warriors.
Yeah.
And if I had been born into such a culture, society, we would be brothers.
Yeah. That's
for sure. I would be right down there at the Berserker gym training
with you guys. That would be great. Yeah.
That's for sure. I would have been, I would have embraced that part of our heritage. And there's lots to be learned there. And I think it's our duty to those who were so brave and went before you and maybe passed along in the blood in your veins. Maybe some of those ancestors have passed along such great mindset things. It's your duty to take that blood and make it stronger. That's what I think.
Yeah.
All right, brother.
All right. Thank you again. Yeah. Thank you, Chad.